Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, it's that time of the year when every sports person who ever laced up their boots feels compelled to tell their life story. So which are the ones worth hearing about? Well, it can be very hard to tell. But Malachy Clerkin of the Irish Times has read most of them. Sports books of the year we're talking about here. And you're here to tell us the best buys for the sports fan in your life, or even for yourself if you get a voucher from your auntie. And by the way, can I just say, you don't necessarily have to be in a sport to like a lot of these, do you?
Certainly not.
No.
Oh, certainly not.
Absolutely.
No.
So before we get to the list, what makes a good sports book? That's very mean, sorry.
No. Okay. Insight, Dave.
Insight.
You know, telling you stuff that you don't already know. How do you consume sport?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, I go to some matches and I love watching it on the telly.
There you go. I absolutely love it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but watching it on the telly is a very immediate thing. It's a very one-dimensional thing.
Well, but I went to five or six international rugby matches this year. Certainly some Leinster ones and other. And when I see on the telly, I wasn't at the All Blacks one, the amount of detail I learn from the telly that I would not have learned if I was sitting there with a pint in my hand.
And yet, you still come away from these games knowing nothing really about the people involved.
True.
And that's what the books are for.
Very good, Malachy. I think that was an answer, or else you evaded it. I'm not sure which.
No, that's exactly what
insight. Okay, give us an insight book. Give us a good one.
Okay, where do we start? Why don't we start with Tony Ten, which, can't be argued is not a sports book. It's by Declan Lynch of the Sunday Independent and Tony O'Reilly. Yeah. Now, if the name Tony O'Reilly means anything to anybody, it's not the guy who used to own half of Ireland. It is a chap from Carlow. He was the postmaster in Gorey Post Office. Stole 1.75 million quid off the post office over a number of years to put into his Paddy Power online account, where his username was Tony Ten. He, over the course of those years, won the guts of 9.5 million quid. He was a very good gambler. He was also a terrible gambler because he lost over 10.7 odd million quid. His total losses were about 1.75 million. He was just a chronic gambler. And the book basically details his life, how this happened, how his life was hollowed out by gambling taking a hold of him. And the reason it's the sports book is because gambling is so pervasive in sport now.
Yeah.
And he was just like any of us that have a bet. Once a weekend, a bit more around Christmas, a bit around Cheltenham, Champions League matches on, you might do a first goal, that kind of thing. He was just that guy. He was just a sports fan, knew a bit about sport, had a bet here and there, and then it just spiralled off into a completely uncontrollable place. And this book is so compelling in detailing how that happened.
Well, do you think in any way at all that it's kind of prescient, in that I think there's a tsunami coming around the corner with the 16 and 17 year olds now who will be 26, 27, 36, 37, and the five euro bets on your phone and all the rest
100%.
There is a huge floodgates going to open.
Like,
did I see something about live sport on TV this week is not going to have betting or something?
Well, yeah, they passed something in the UK just last week, actually, that they're going to ban. It's not even ban. I think that the sports themselves or the TV companies themselves are self-reflexively going to remove in-running betting. That Ray Winston ad that's on all football matches at halftime.
And it's used for them all because he doesn't have to name the names.
There you go, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's going to be gone. In-event betting ads are going to be removed. I'd be interested to see how that works out. I'd be really interested to see, like, during, I don't know, the Cheltenham Festival, how that's going to work.
Sure, but like at the moment, if you watch live football on the Skies, there's no other ad.
Clubs and all that sort of stuff.
And anyway, as I've said, one of the betting companies have a shop in the main street of the town that I live in, or the little place, and directly opposite is another one of the exact same.
There you go.
They bought the place across the road and didn't want something coming in. So there's two boiled sports.
It's massive.
Opposite.
It's so massive. Huge. Yeah. And this book is where the rubber meets the road.
All right, and it's good. It's really good.
Oh, brilliant. Really
powerful
brilliant
story. Okay, that's Tony Ten by Declan Lynch and Tony O'Reilly on Gill Books, just under 17 euro. Okay, keep going.
So we got a couple of boxing books that are outstanding, really genuinely outstanding. I mean, I wouldn't be a big fan of boxing, over and back. But
Norman,
these books are tremendous. Okay, so two of them here. One of them, The Lost Soul of Eamon McGee, by a guy called Paul D. Gibson. This is an award-winning book, has won loads of the awards this year. It's about Eamon McGee, who was a guy from Belfast, boxed through the sort of, you know, 90s into the early 2000s. Brilliant boxer, but just lived a completely chaotic life behind it. Was an alcoholic, a drug addict, womanizer, you know, was kneecapped by the IRA, was his son was killed, stabbed to death, he was beaten with baseball bats, he had just a totally chaotic life. And the thing was, if you ever came across him, you were going, wow, there's a book in this guy's life. And as he said himself, listen, but when your man sits down with him first, McGee says to him, listen, lad, I've had this happen to me, this happened, this happened to me. My life isn't a book, it's an effing movie script. And it is, like, you know, it's a completely cinematic life that he led. The achievement of this book is actually being able to produce it in the first place, because McGee himself is a completely unreliable narrator, you know, by his own admission, you know, his memory of things are hazy, he's completely unreliable. So Gibson kind of pieces together his life by talking to the people around him, to going back to old newspaper clippings, and it's a monumental piece of work.
And it is a movie.
Oh my God. Right, like, okay. I don't know why. There's five movies in it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know which of the stories.
The problem
in
is there's 5,000 boxing movies out there.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot. The Lost Soul of Eamon McGee by Paul D. Gibson Mercier. It's just under €17. And what's Fighter by Andy Lee and
so
Niall
this
Kelly?
Is completely, you know, like, there's none of the chaos in this. There's none of the, you know, Andy Lee is, you know, anybody that's ever come across him, one of sport's nice fellas, one of the sound guys. But they, himself and Niall Kelly, have produced a kind of a magical book here. It is so well written. You know, sports people's autobiographies, you know, often struggle for writing style between, you know, the trying to get the guy, the sports person's voice right, and the writer himself kind of getting carried away with it in places. This is just hangs together so beautifully, and the writing in it is excellent. The boxing insight in it is excellent, and it's a terrific, terrific book.
Okay, so it's a great ghost-written book, and you hear Andy's voice throughout.
Absolutely.
And it's called Fighter by Andy Lee and Niall Kelly. Gill Books, just under €18. Now let's get to GAA, the chaos years of Dublin.
Yeah, so there's a heap of GAA books out. You know, Sean Kavanagh's out, Davy Fitz is out, Cora Staunton, there's loads of them around, any amount of them. This is the best of them. This is the best GAA book out by my reckoning this year. It's by Neil Cotter, not a sports journalist. He's a news journalist with the Irish Sun, but he is, far more importantly, a Dublin football fan, and has been and was in the years when, and this is not so long ago, when they were no good. Or when they were
for
just
a
good
decade
enough.
And a half, even 2 decades.
Yeah, between 95 when they won that All-Ireland and 2011 when they won that All-Ireland, they went an unimaginably long period in that space of time when they didn't win a Leinster football title even. And this is the story of those years, how it all fell apart after 95, the struggles that they had of getting out rid of the older players, bringing in new ones, making them all fit, all that sort of stuff. And the years, you know, when they were a thoroughly dislikable team, you know, when they were the England football team of the GAA that everybody loved to hate and loved to see crash out. And then towards the end, when they start getting their act together and John Costlow comes in and Pat Gilroy comes in, and we have what we have now, which is the Eternal Empire, which, you know, everybody else in the country hates again, but now they're very good.
I get the impression you're saying it's kind of entertaining.
Yeah, it's great. Okay. Great yarns through it, great characters in it, like Keith Barr's brilliant, all that sort of stuff.
In terms of association football, I've heard about Peter Crouch's book. What's that like?
So,
How to Be a Footballer. It's supposed to be very good.
It is brilliant. All the other books that I'm talking about, Dave, you know, they can be worthy, and, you know, it can be a fair amount of misery and human drama, all that sort of carry on in them. And that's all very, very good and should be in books. This is the best crack of any book you'll read this year. It's Peter Crouch. It's not an autobiography. It's basically his sort of guide to the top level of football in the Premier League, Champions League and international. And he just has a brilliant eye for the stupidity of that world, the madness of that world. And he just, you know, goes around taking the piss out of, and the best thing about it is that he names names in it, you know, like it's not, and there was this guy at Portsmouth who, you know, did this or did that. Like he talks about Jibril Cisse, who he was at Liverpool with, who used to come to training in a full red linen suit with glasses with no glass in them and a cane, driving a car with a picture of his daughter sprayed on the bonnet in black and white. And then he tells a story of, like, he has a chapter on tattoos where he talks about. Do you remember John Carew, the Norwegian guy, big centre forward? He got a tattoo on his neck that said "Ma vie, mes règles," as in "my life, my rules." But the tattoo artist got the accent wrong on "règle," and so what it says was "my life, my menstruation."
Right. Okay. So in other words, it's full of anecdotes. Names are mentioned, and it's very funny.
It's hilarious. It is the best crack of any sports.
And you
book
probably learn more about kind of top class, very rich people.
Very
football.
Rich people. And just, he has a brilliant eye for the absurd. Like, he knows.
Do you,
like,
know, these days, or the last 10 years, his wife seems to be more famous. She's always...
Oh, yeah, she's real famous. Yeah.
Abby.
And he Abby Clancy, I think she's called. Yeah. And he talks about her, and like, she has a proper level of fame, you know, and he's just happy to kind of go along with it. But he's
and he scored some dynamite goals in his day, I can
sure
tell
did.
You.
Oh, like, he has a full chapter on volleys, which he loves.
Yeah, he's good at that. From outside the box.
He's great line in it where early on in his England career, he was playing for England when Capello was in charge.
Yeah.
And he tried a volley and it just didn't come off. And Capello went to him and says, "Peter, you need to work on your technique for your volleys." And he just went, "You have no idea how long I've been practicing volleys, buddy." He said all this in his mind. He didn't say this to Capello's face, but he just kind of smiled politely and moved on because he knew, okay, I got that one wrong. But trust me, man, I know more about volleys
than
you do.
I'm the volley man.
Yeah,
right, indeed. How to Be a Footballer, brilliant title by Peter Crouch, the Ebury Press. It's just under 15 quid. Okay, now, so they're the best ones, I get the impression.
Those are our top five, won't go wrong with any of
those. Well, let's go into the second tier then.
Oh, there's a really good historical book, Dave. It's called The Hurlers, right, by Paul Rouse. Paul Rouse is a well-known historian, has done plenty of books and plenty of stuff on history and the history of the GAA. This is the story of the first ever All-Ireland hurling final. But that's sort of, you know, the hook for it. It was 1887. But really, it's the story of how hurling got off the ground. Like, as he says, in 1882, it was a game that was played in very small pockets, far flung around the country. There was no structure to it. There was no, you know, infrastructure to it. By 1887, they had an All-Ireland Championship going. By whatever, the early 1900s, it had rooted itself in the places that it is even big
today.
So
5 years from nothing to an All-Ireland Championship?
More or less, yeah. And this is the story of how all that happened. And, you know, it's a portrait of Michael Cusack, who, you know, and Maurice Stavin, the founding fathers of the GAA. And for, you know, it's a book by a historian, but it's not stuffy. Like, you know, it's not... It goes along more lightly than you would expect or hope from a historian.
The Hurlers by
Paul Rouse. The Hurlers by Paul Rouse, yeah.
Rouse. Penguin Ireland, it's just over 21 quid. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, how about rugby?
Yeah, rugby this year. It's a couple of books in rugby this year. Dark Arts by Mike Ross and Liam Hayes. Mike Ross was this guy who came reasonably late to rugby and was never, you know, didn't come through the Leinster schools, wasn't one of these kind of teenage stars, kind of picked and patted his way to the top. But then for 6-7 years, arguably became one of Ireland's three most important players because he was the tight head scrum, tight head prop indeed, and he was the guy who locked the scrum for Ireland, and that was his pitch to Joe Schmidt, that was his pitch to everybody else, and that was what he became. He became a really important player.
Do you know what I will say about Dark Arts by Mike Ross? Did you know that Mike Ross is the name of the character in Suits who actually was hanging around with Rachel, who is now Meghan Markle, big queen person.
There you go.
These are things you need to know.
There you go. So
okay,
there's a royal element to this as well. this is good.
Dark Arts by Mike Ross. wasn't Liam Hayes.
I was kind of surprised by it. I didn't know that there'd be anything particularly interesting in it, but he overcomes a really desperate early tragedy in his family. His brother takes his own life when they're only teenagers. Very sad. But he overcomes that. Comes out of the book as a really intelligent guy, a really interesting dude.
Okay, what about Ulster winning the European Rugby Cup back in 1999?
Yeah, now this is good.
The book
crack
is out now.
This is indeed, this is good crack. Like, this is, so it's called The Last Amateurs by Jonathan Bradley. So Ulster won the what is now the Heineken Cup in 1999, first Irish province to win it, at a time when, you know, the country was sort of getting into rugby. You know, Munster really popularised it with it getting to the final the following year or the year after. But this was just a grey area between when rugby was amateur and when it became professional. Yeah. And so this is a story from just the tail end of the old days when everything wasn't so serious. There was a few of these guys had actual jobs. You know, there's a truck driver, there's that kind of stuff among them. And they go in the piss after games, all that sort of stuff. And it's a really unlikely story. You know, like they never, ever reached those heights again. They got to a final that Leinster hockeyed them in a few years ago. But it's okay. Great. Like, and there's, you know, guys who played for Ireland there. Yeah. Andy Ward, David Humphreys, Simon Mason, all these guys. But yeah, I really
okay,
like this.
It's called The Last Amateurs by Jonathan Bradley, just under 13 quid. Okay, one or two more. There's Tiger Woods, the book. That was the big one this year. Was that last year? No, it was this year.
Yeah. No, it was early this year. It was back around sort of February, March kind of thing. Yeah. It was out just before the Masters. So it was out in March, early April, by Armin Katayan and Jeff Benedict. One of these things that, you know, that American literature does really well. Takes a life and examines it from a million different angles. If you've read many Tiger Woods books down the years, you'll come across a bit of repetition here. Well, if you haven't, then this is the only one you ever need to read. But was it really, the really interesting stuff in it is his relationship with his dad. Earl Woods was this really overbearing father. Hailed as a hero when he was alive for creating this magnificent golfer. But when Tiger turned out to be a kind of a damaged individual, as the world came to see, like, what his dad did with him early when he was a tiny child.
Are you saying all fingers suddenly pointed to the dad?
Not all fingers, but, you know, you kind of read this book and you kind of come away going, man, this guy did not have a normal life from very early on. But this is, you'll never get a more comprehensive Tiger book than this.
Okay, Tiger Woods by Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan. Now, Rosemary Smith, Driven.
Now, what a life. Do you know Rosemary Smith?
I remember Rosemary Smith growing up.
Yeah, you see, you're older than me. Older than me. I don't.
Do I know anything about her? No.
Exactly. What a life this woman led. You know, she was a famous racing driver in the late 60s and early 70s. She hung about with all these famous people. You know, hung around with Ollie Reed and Jimmy Greaves.
That's right, and then she set up a driving school and all the rest. And
Yes, people see the Rosemary Smith driving school on the side of the N7.
Did
it
go down?
It went way down, Her life went into real free fall in the sort of 90s. She had a failed marriage. She went bankrupt. She had all this sort of stuff. But this woman has lived an amazing life, and it's all here in this book, written with Anne Ingle. The two of them have just come together to write a fascinating book. Like people, sir, look, I'm 40 and I know nothing about this woman's life. So any sports fans would find plenty in this.
Well, she was hanging around with movie royalty, as you say, by Rosemary Smith and Anne Ingle. Now, what about Des? He's been around too, hasn't he?
Speaking of royalty. God almighty, I'm in RTE here. What am I going to say about Des? Play It Again, Des. It's Des Cahill's book, written with Mary Hannigan. Look, everybody that's been around Des would know that Des has had a book in him. Low these many years, you name an Irish sporting event that happened in the last 30 years, Des was there for
and
it.
Do you feel as though, like, with an RTE sort of microphone or whatever, that he got so much access that even now nobody gets that kind of access?
Not at all. Those were the days. Like, back Kelly and Roach, Italian 90, all that sort of stuff, he was there. And the fact that he was there, the sports people wanted to talk to him and he was the conduit, and it was brilliant. And this is his life. It's very light-hearted. It is exactly as you would imagine it to be. He freely admits most of the way through what a chancer he is. pardon me, how he's got away with everything all these years. Very enjoyable book. Great anecdotes, great yarns.
All you have to do
yarns.
Really is be a fan, and Des is a big fan of
there
it
you
all.
Go. That's yeah. it, exactly.
And
yeah.
And can well put it out there. Mm-hmm. Okay, Play It Again is called, Play It Again,
Play
Des,
it again Des yeah.
by Des Cal and Mary Hannigan. That's just under €20, Sport Media it is. Okay, anything else in terms of just any quickies?
A few quickies. There's a few collections of articles that are always worth people's time. So there's one, Behind the Lines, which is by the staff of the 42.ie. A lot of people would know the 42 as this sports website. You'd have it on your app. You'd have the app, and it's better known, I'd say, for, you know, kind of breaking news, team news, that kind of stuff. This is a collection of their longer stuff, their in-depth features, and it's great stuff. They like
okay,
they have
it's
great
behind
writers
the lines
there,
by the
yeah.
staff of the 42.ie.
And there's another one.
What's the seventh day?
So the seventh day is the Sunday Independent. It's a collection of the best sports writing from the Sunday Independent over the last 30 years. And if people read nothing else from what we've talked about here, go and find the piece that Eamon Dunphy did in 1990 with George Best. He goes and spends a day with George Best in a pub in London. And it is one of the most beautiful pieces of writing I can ever remember reading. I never heard about it. I only came across it about three or four weeks ago. Eamon is completely unrecognizable from the persona that he has to the guy who wrote this sort of touching, tender portrait of George. Like George was.
Sorry, what's the title of this again?
Where so this is called The Seventh Day,
right.
And so this is
by
one
John
of the
Green.
Yeah,
oh,
by John.
It's one of the pieces.
So
I
this is
you,
one
right.
of the pieces in it.
Right, yeah.
And it's from 1990, A Day with George Best. It's really beautiful.
And finally, there's no book here by Malachy Clerkin.
Dave,
when is that going
to
happen?
Dave, look how long it takes me to read all
yeah,
these
well,
bloody things.
Well, yeah,
how
exactly.
Where am I getting the time?
Yeah, exactly.
To write,
good point.
For
yes.
the love of God,
Malachy Clerkin, hard-working person from the Irish Times. Come on, Malachy. Happy Christmas. Thanks.
Available at less than $17.99 as well.
Goodbye.